Jesus said to his disciples, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? Did we not drive out demons in your name? Did we not do mighty deeds in your name?' Then I will declare to them solemnly, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you evildoers.' Everyone who listens to these words of mine and acts on them will be like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and buffeted the house. But it did not collapse. It had been set solidly on rock. And everyone who listens to these words of mine but does not act on them will be like a fool who built his house on sand. The rain fell, the floods came, and the winds blew and buffeted the house, and it collapsed and was completely ruined." When Jesus finished these words, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority, and not as their scribes. And so the gospel of the Lord. You've had it happen once or twice. You go into a church, and someone is speaking in a way that brings you to life. The speaker is intelligent, yet simple, profound, yet ordinary. And he or she connects ideas with everyday experience. This person is really alive. This seems to be happening more often in the church as Pope Francis employs a style of preaching that touches the experience of his listeners. One could truly say he speaks from authority. I'd like to explore the mystery of such preaching and speaking. It seems to me that we need to consider two areas that contribute to authoritative speaking. The first and most important consideration is that the speaker is completely present to his listeners. He or she needs to be fully alive. This is perhaps even more true for effective reading. When I was in college, the speech teacher said, "Have you ever noticed that when you ask someone who's highly educated, doctoral degrees, the whole thing, to read something to a class or an audience, how very often the result is highly disappointing? They read the words, but they do not communicate the message." When I was in the seminary, or house of studies as we called it, preparing to be a Dominican, very often on Sunday nights, our provincial at the time, Father Joseph Fulton, would come and read from the works of Charles Dickens. He would ease himself into an old leather platform rocker with some of the springs and stuffing coming out of it. The lights would be turned out, and someone would light a storm lantern set next to him, and he would take us away into the world of Dickens. Nicholas Nickleby, A Tale of Two Cities. Later on, when I worked with Father Joe at a parish, we'd gather at someone's home for a candlelight reading of A Christmas Carol. Often a fire going, children, cats, dogs all tumbled about on the carpet, and adults captured by the magic of a family Christmas. Jack, as we called him, had a distinctive voice for each of the characters, and in no time he had us traveling to lands of adventure and struck with wonder of great literature. These experiences have given me a deep appreciation for people who can read well and speak well. I'm still discovering new approaches to the familiar passages of Scripture. When people can simply make these words come to life, what a joy it is. But authoritative speaking or reading also needs good content. And here I'm excited about the way in which Pope Francis blends excellent theology and ordinary human experience. He gives us a living message. I think that his time of teaching literature and his love of the Argentine traditions of heroic tales and music, and yes, even dancing the tango, contribute to his effectiveness. Since he became Pope, I've read many accounts of his life and times. Most recently, I've been reading the story of his life, The Great Reformer, by Austin Ivorley. Several reviewers feel that this one is the really best source to explain his life. I've been fascinated by the conflicts that Francis had within the Jesuits during the struggle between liberation theology and the popular folk religion that Francis introduced into the formation programs of the Jesuit seminary students. That account by Averly really needs to be read in full. I'm reminded of the conflict that we felt at that time, and even now, between the so-called distinction between Catholics who favor the spirit of Vatican II, and now the resurgence of younger clergy who fare strict rules and complicated and often exaggerated gestures, and even worship in Latin, which most people do not understand. I began as a priest when everything was in Latin, did it for 5 years. We did our best to make it intelligible and to speak it in a conversational tone. But you really don't hear that today. Even so, it's really hard to communicate if people don't understand what you're saying. And after all, the Latin, at best, was only a translation. Why, this is especially true among many archaic and even precious words that have been slipped into our New English translation of the Mass. But Jesus isn't like that at all, is he? He speaks with authority directly. He's fully present to his hearers, and we ought to be like that. He's rooted in the full mystery of the divine being, and prayer should lead us there. People were astonished at how he used ordinary experiences and words to lead us into the presence of the Father. I think that people appreciated him because, although he said some very challenging things, he used ordinary images. Storms and collapse, shepherds, farmers, merchants, lawyers, scholars, thieves, kings. He helps us to understand, and he brings a wonderful sense of compassion to us in our doubt and suffering. In all of this, we need to expand our vision to develop a flexibility that's really necessary for this present time, beyond our mere tastes and preferences or clinging to the past. That's simply too small. History and even the experiences of our own rapidly changing time shows us the need of moving beyond small personal preferences and religious fashions and emphasizing the truths that are really important and touch all lives. Only these can lead to an authoritative expression. In their book, Experiencing Spirituality, Kurtz and Ketchum have a story that connects me with this sort of authority, the one that I really need. It seems some very enthusiastic evangelical Christians visited the farm country in Indiana and encountered a Mennonite farmer. And they greeted him with, "Brother, are you saved?" Well, not wanting to put down their enthusiastic Christian stance, but also not wanting to be presumptuous, after a long pause, he asked for a pencil and paper. He wrote down 10 names, some good friends, but also some who might not care for him at all. And he handed them the list and suggested that they ask these people, because he would not presume to answer such a question on his own behalf. Well, I spent some time thinking about what my list would be like. Perhaps this would be a good first step in enabling me to live and approach and to speak in that authoritative fashion that really echoes the truthfulness, the joy, and the beauty of God's promises that we delight in the words of Jesus.